Today's guest needs no introduction, from the Junos to his work with Chad Allen, the Expressions, to the Guess Who, to BTO. Ladies and gentlemen, the legendary Canadian rocker royalty, Randy Bachman. Tansi, and welcome to 89.3 The Raven, Randy.
Hi, nice to talk to you, and good morning to all your listeners out there.
Yeah, now, as it would have it, not too long ago, I had Burton on my show. I got to hang out backstage with him and the guys, and they had nothing but amazing things to say about you, by the way. Do you also tend to break out some of those Guess Who classics in your set these days, like he does? Can we expect a few of those on this tour?
I do. I kind of have to do it. People expect it. And when I go to see someone, I want to see I want to hear every song I've ever heard by them on the radio. When I'm there with my band and we totally rock out with all the BTO stuff and a couple of new songs, we go and actually do the songs I wrote for the Guess Who. We do These Eyes, Laughing, Undone, No Time, No Sugar, American Woman. We do like 5 or 6 songs. You know, the fans expect to hear it.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Do you ever get tired of playing any of the Guess Who or even the BTO tunes after all these years, 40, 50 years? Or does the satisfaction it gives the rest of us singing along to them, is that enough for you to keep playing them?
That's enough. And to see the reaction from people who kind of, you wake up something in them. Because, and I heard this on TV, I think Sting was on TV a couple of months ago, and they said to him, about his music, the same thing. And he said, let me tell you something, music is a universal, worldwide touch machine. It touches everybody. If I ask you what you were doing 10 years ago today, or 15 years ago, yeah, you wouldn't remember. But what were the first time when you heard Roxanne? What were you doing when you heard These Eyes? What were you doing when you heard Taking Care of Business? You flash back to being on the beach or driving on a tractor somewhere in the field and hearing a song on the radio, or in the back seat with a girl. You flash back to that moment. So when you're doing a concert, everybody has these different recollections on their face of smiling and singing and flashing back to The Shadows of Yesterday, right? Which is my new album title, Talent Art, putting out. We have a song called Shadows of Yesterday. Everybody wants to dance in the shadows and to the music of yesterday. And so it's really fun to go out and do a gig and see the reaction when I'm playing 15 to 20 hit songs. And my son Tal is there, and he does his hits from, he does She's So High and a couple other songs he had in television shows and stuff. People just freak out. It's really a fun thing.
Oh, yeah, that must be awesome. And you totally make a great point because, my late mom passed away about 10 years ago, and I grew up listening to all her vinyl from the BTO, the Guess Who, Stones, all of that. And it brings you back to those times when, when I think about her when some of these songs come. But I want to talk about that vinyl for a second. You host a syndicated vinyl show. I also have a vinyl segment and have been an avid vinyl enthusiast. Do you still hit record shops now and then and go digging for vinyl whenever you're on your travels?
I do. And amazingly enough, I just bought another turntable. I mean, how many turntables have I sold? I bought a turntable that was like $850, which is like big money, because it's all balanced and has a great stylus, and it has 100% sonic reproduction. Because you could buy albums on vinyl, old ones that are still sealed, nobody's opened them, and you open it up and you play it for the first time, and then you can digitize it. And if you can believe it, I'm buying some of my own albums. the tape has been destroyed, and people want copies, or I want it now for my website. I buy an old album of mine that's brand new, open it up, don't touch it, put it on the turntable, play it once and digitize it so you can put it into Spotify and on my website, things like that. So, the thing about vinyl, it lasts forever.
Yeah.
Tape degrades. Remember when you had cassettes, your little sister or your daughter would pull it out and pull the tape out, you'd go and you're pulling out the tape just for fun, and they're wrecking your stuff. You can't wreck vinyl unless you melt it or the blowtorch.
Yeah, and it gets crackly. Like, I still got some of my mom's old records, and I played them on my show, and I love that old crackle. Like, the more crackle, the better for me when it comes to the vinyl show. But I never got rid of any of my old vinyl. Did you hang on to all of your old vinyl from back in those days as well?
Yeah, I've got 10 or 15,000 albums, and I used to have a jukebox, but I have got like 5,000 singles. They're really fun. And what's neat is your kids and grandkids like them. I have an old jukebox. I actually bought it in Edmonton, and they're from a guy who had jukeboxes everywhere. And to put in your 100 favorite records and to just go and play it, nothing sounds like a jukebox. It's one big speaker that blows your face off. Stereo is kind of weak because the stuff's divided left and right, and it just doesn't hit you like being in a concert sitting in front of the stage. When you've got a jukebox with that one big 12 or 15-inch speaker, it rocks the whole room. It's just amazing.
Awesome. Now, you're bringing up Edmonton. You've obviously been through here so many times over the years. Any standout memories for you or favorite places that you go to when, when you've come to Edmonton in the last 40, 50 years?
Yes, there's one, and I can't remember the names, but I've played Edmonton for decades. And I was playing there maybe 5 or 6 years ago on my own with my band, and it was a great big show downtown at the stadium. And I went to my hotel, and then I walked about a block to a restaurant and had a wonderful dinner. And by the time I got back to my hotel, I walked in, the desk said, "We have something for you." I said, "What is it?" They said, "Your credit card." And I said, "What?" They said, "It fell out of your wallet after you paid your bill at the restaurant. They knew you were in town because they read it in the paper, heard it on the radio. They called us at Visa. We said, "Oh, you just checked into the Edmonton Inn or something." And they set my credit card there. I walked 2 blocks. They handed me my credit card. So I went back to the restaurant. And they said, "Wow, this is amazing. Who found my card?" "Well, it was my waiter." "Great. Here's a $100 tip." They said, "We don't want a tip. We think you're great and your music's great. And we found your credit card. And this guy needs this for he's on tour." So that was a wonderful indication of honesty of Canadians and people doing diligence and bringing me back my credit card. It was an unbelievable experience, actually.
And I like to think that karma comes back on those people in a good way, that, you know, that just do good things like that. Good things happen to them, hopefully, right?
Yeah. When he wouldn't take the $100, I went to his manager and I said, "I'm leaving you this. Give it to him. I'm going to call you later." Because the guy wouldn't take it.
So yeah.
When I called later, the next day I was leaving town, I called, "Did you give it to him?" He said, "Yeah." And he appreciated it. So it was good. I gave him the karma back. I mean, he could have went shopping with my credit card and went crazy and bought a car or something, you know.
On Randy Bachman's tab. That's awesome. Now, the lost guitar, I got to bring it up, the Gretsch. I remember hearing this story about a year or two ago. For our listeners who haven't heard it, you had a guitar stolen in 76 from a hotel room. It was your main axe that you had written so many hits on. And 46 years later, just a couple of years ago, you found it in Japan. How good does it feel to have that Gretsch back at home now?
It's wonderful because we call it the magic guitar because I learned to play on it, but I wrote and played on it. "These Eyes, Laughing, Undone, American Woman, Taking Care of Business, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet." I wrote it and played it on all the records. And it was like my magic guitar. This was my number one guitar. When it was gone, boom, it was gone. Now that I have it back, I'm recording right now. I'm using this guitar. And with that guitar, I hit number one album and single with the Guess Who, and number one album and single with BTO. Maybe it'll come out. We're doing a documentary that's going to be on HBO on the lost guitar, the magic guitar. The closing credits are going to be me playing this guitar, and maybe I'll have a number one again with it, even if it's on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't care. But there's this magic in the guitar that says, I'm number one, which is really cool.
And I thought that I heard somewhere that there was a little bit of, you might have had a little bit of a superstition behind that you hadn't had a number one since the guitar got stolen. Is that true?
Well, that's true. I haven't. I mean, how often can you hit number one with an album and a single at the same time in different groups? I'm the only guy who's done it next to Paul McCartney. I think maybe Nickelback's done it, but in the same band, right?
Yeah.
So it's like me and two different bands, maybe 6 years apart. And the joke was, you know, I'm not exactly chopped liver. I've had hit records and I've gone on and on and on and on. But it's hard to live down 12 or 15 hit songs that have sold, you know, 50 million copies. You got to play those for the people. And so I'm always looking for that next new song. Maybe it'll be my next song called Shadows of Yesterday, which is going to be the theme of the guitar documentary that we're doing, or Lost and Found, the magic of the lost guitar. And like I said, even if I hit number one on Rotten Tomatoes, I don't care. It'll be a number one magical thing again.
Yeah. Any word on when that doc is set to come out at all, even a ballpark?
They're going to premiere it at the TIF, Toronto International. Yeah. Film Festival, and then it'll be on HBO probably later in the year, around Christmas or after Christmas. They're editing it right now. They're getting guys like Neil Young to mention his 2 cents on it. When I got the guitar, he was there in Winnipeg. When I bought it, he bought his, and I bought mine from the same store. And so, and he had his all these years, and mine has been lost. So when he heard it was on the news that mine was gone, he sent me an email saying, "Wow, you got your Gretsch back. I remember when it was stolen, you cried for a whole week. You know, it's like your dog being run over."
Yeah.
The dog, and to get it back has been amazing. I just got it back now because it's in the Calgary Museum at the Museum of
the Bell Center.
National Bell Center there.
Yeah.
I had to have it shipped back here because this week I'm recording a visual and audio with it. Then it's going to go right back to the Bell Center because I have about 150 guitars on display there, which if you're a guitar fan, and almost everybody is, or a fan of mine or my music, to see the guitars there is stunning. I saw it about 2 weeks ago when it opened. I was blown away. So, and I own them, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
And so it was really a great thing. So I got the guitar yesterday. We're going to use it for a week to record audio and visual to finish up the documentary. And then it's going back to Calgary.
Awesome. Now, these tunes, you know, you're writing, recording, and you've been doing it for so long. Do, you know, these melodies, progressions, lyric ideas, do they just come to you in random places out of nowhere? Or do you, you know, do they come to you more places than others?
Well, as a child, and I find this with a lot of people and basically musicians and with my own children, there's a soundtrack in my head. There's music going all the time. And as a little kid, you might see a little kid 2 or 3 years old pushing around in a cart in a Safeway or something and just singing something. And so I've sang all my life. And when I got old enough to play an instrument and people would say, "What are you singing?" And you say, "I don't know."
Yeah.
Well, did you make that up? And you say, "I think so." And then you play it on a guitar and you record it and it comes out as a record. And you realize you made up a song, or it's in you, and you're just playing it. And until somebody knocks on the door and says, "Oh, by the way, you stole that song. It was written by my brother, and it's called, you know, it's called Stardust or something."
Yeah,
or it's called,
yeah.
"You're in the Mood." You get a lawsuit, you settle it, because I have this music in my head, and I play it, and sometimes I match it to lyrics, or I might get you might say something to me like "Taking Care of Business," or, you know, I people don't know I produce Trooper. They're really good friends of mine. So when they said a song like "We're Here for a Good Time," they wrote "We're Here for a Good Time." They say "Let's Raise a Little Hell." They write "Raise a Little Hell." Do you know what I mean? And I was behind that and produced it for them. Trooper just got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It was a big deal for me. Yeah, back in the 70s when BTO hit number one, I got offers to produce 10 or 15 other bands on A&M Records and Elektra Records all over the world. And I didn't want to leave home because when you're in a band, all you do is leave home. And so I found a band that was rehearsing a block from my house and playing a gig, and they were called Applejack, and we changed their name to Trooper, and I spent 4 years helping them write their songs and taking them into studios and producing them, and the result is, you know, Santa Maria, Boys of the Bright White Sports
yeah.
Car, Raise a Little Hell, We're Here for a Good Time, every one of their songs,
I mean,
playing
guitar those,
on
yeah.
it or helping them.
Yeah,
so that's a great thing about writing songs. You get a title, like Raise a Little Hell, and you put it out, and it becomes an anthem.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I got into radio, I've only been radio for about 3 years. I was a songwriter. I'm still a songwriter with a band. And I totally relate to that, having a song in your head all the time, whether it's someone else's or whether it's an idea you're working on. And I love that. I want to jump to family for a sec. Aside from your son, Tal, I think I read somewhere that your daughters are also quite musical. And you have, from what I read, 26 grandkids and 4 great-grandkids. Is that number still accurate?
Well, there's another one on the way of a great-grandchild.
Okay. And it must bring you loads of joy to have such a big family, your family and kids. They must mean the world to you, hey?
They are. They're all musically talented, except some of them said, "We don't want the life you had." So their musical talent is in their home with their own family. And as much as I try to convince them, the only guy that's been successful has been Tal, to actually take on the lifestyle. And he loves it. And he's a great guy to carry on my tradition because he and I are out there on stage there every night, rocking and rolling and, you know, doing the songs. And it's just fantastic. It's a, you know, every time I see an old truck driving along, and on the door it'll say Sanford and Sons or Smith and Sons Plumbers. I go, there's a lucky father. He's working with his son, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I feel very lucky that. And I also just see John Fogerty's on tour now with the Fogerty Family Band.
With his kids,
His two sons. And I did the same thing with Tal. We couldn't play anywhere. So every Friday night we set up and did we called the Friday Night Train Wreck, where we each brought 5 songs and tried to thump each other and play the songs together. We didn't know what each other was bringing. And we called it the train wreck, and people loved it because we would start in the wrong key, play the wrong chords, yell at each other. It was like Wayne's World. That was that crash every Friday at 6 o'clock. Those are all on YouTube. If you want to Google Backman and Backman train wreck, you can see them. And there, we just did a Backman and Backman tour, and we took requests from the people in the audience. They put them in a little box. We took the box on stage, put out a thing, and said, "Okay, we're going to try to play this song by, you know, by Flock of Seagulls. We haven't even heard it in 20 years. And we try to play it. And the people just laughed and they sang along with us, because you're going to go, la da 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 da. you don't even know the lyrics, or you sing the first line and the rest is la-las. And so we did that for a lot of fun. And then Cal evolved into being into the band. We ended up with a band called Backward and Backward. And we go out and do that for fun. I'm still rock and rolling with my band. And like, we're coming on tour soon to Calgary and Edmonton and casinos and everything. We're going out west to play pop. We're going to Fort St. John at the end of July to play a great big classic rock country festival with Tanya Tucker and a whole bunch of other acts from Nashville. They're kind of mixing classic rock now with country music, and it makes a great festival. It's just really a great blend of music, because Nashville music now is basically classic rock from the 70s with an acoustic guitar that, you know, and an accent in your voice.
You know, I really got to go check some of those out on YouTube, because it sounds like so much fun. And, you know, you can do this polished rock any time of the week, but to do something organic like that and just have fun with it, it sounds like such a fun time for you and Tal to have. When I talked to Burton, we talked about the prairies a bit. You guys both being born in Manitoba, of course, do you feel like the prairies are a big part of who you are? And do you feel the nostalgia when you return to, say, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba?
Yeah, my daughter lives in Lethbridge, so I got kids and grandkids there. And to go to Calgary, I was in Calgary a couple of weeks ago when my guitar exhibit opened. To drive to Lethbridge from there, there's nothing like it. Talk about a horizon. Everywhere you look, there's a horizon. There's no mountains. You're just driving. And there's something fantastically peacefully calm. And it's a straight line. You're not going around any mountains or trees. You can basically duct tape your steering wheel and put a golf club on your accelerator and just drive right down to Lethbridge. You know what I mean? It's amazing.
Put it on autopilot, right? If I was to talk about just one song for a bit, it would probably be Undone. Not just the lyrical backdrop, we all know that story, but more so the musical soundscape behind it. Did that jazz progression come before the song concept, or was the idea for the song already there?
No, I was very lucky when I grew up playing classical violin. I started when I was 5. And then I get to be 14 years of age, so I played classical violin, and it's no longer fun. And then I decided to quit. And the next day, I quit on a Saturday. The next day on a Sunday, Elvis was on Ed Sullivan. My mother had a younger sister, 10 years younger there, so she came over, and they're both watching Elvis. And I look and I say, what is that? And they say, that's called rock and roll. That guy's called Elvis Presley. He's like, what? What's his name? Elvis Presley. I heard names like Jim Bobulinski, you know what I mean, growing up in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
You never heard a name like Elvis Presley. And what is that? Well, that's called a guitar. And then everybody in the audience is screaming, and my aunt starts screaming in the house. Why are you screaming? The guy's so sexy, he's shaking his legs. Look at that. And going from classical violin, which you've got to stand at attention and lift your arm a certain way and play all the bow strokes properly, and you're playing, you know, Beethoven and Tchaikovsky and Chopin and stuff like that. I said, I want to play this music. It's wild. It's rock and roll. What's it called? Rock and roll. What does that mean? Oh, that's great. And I got a guitar and started playing. I had a mentor named Lenny Brill, who was a fantastic guitar player. He was 1 year older than me, but he'd been playing since he was 5 years of age. And he knew all the Scotty Moore, Chet Atkins stuff, and then playing Chuck Berry was easy for him. So he taught me all this stuff, and I learned all these jazz chords. And I started to write with Burton Cummings when Burton joined the band, and I had this jazz progression, and we couldn't think of anything to sing to it because it didn't repeat like American Woman's Day. That's a repetitive thing. It was just an ongoing storyline. And then one day when FM radio started, which was about 1968 in Vancouver, and they were starting to play album cuts, and they said, here's a guy from Hibbings, Minnesota called Robert Zimmerman. He changed his name to Bob Dylan. We don't know why, because we think Bobby Zimmerman's cool. And they played a Bob Dylan album, the whole side. And one of the sides was a song called Ballad in Plain D. And somewhere in there, he said, she came undone. And I thought, wow, that one sentence, she came undone, you know, three words, says everything. And I had this jazz thing, and I went, she's come undone. Whoa. We were in Vancouver with this. I went and knocked on Burton's hotel room doors this Saturday morning and said, listen to this for that jazz song. These chords, we couldn't get anything for it. Listen to this. She's come undone. She didn't know what she was headed for. But when she found what she was headed for, it was too late. He went, wow. And I had like 10 verses like Bob Dylan. Burton said, look, pick 3 verses, we'll record it. But I'm not singing 10 verses. We're not doing a Bob Dylan thing.
Yeah.
So we picked the 3 verses. We went back to Winnipeg. We were driving down Portage Avenue, and I said, you know, if you play, and I was very influenced by the Zombies, Tell Her No, by that song as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, if you play a piano solo in this, we're going to sound like the Zombies, and that's no good. We went into Yamaha. He said to the guys, do you have a flute? They said, yeah. They gave him a flute. He said, oh, this is like play. He used to play a C melody sax in a high school band in Winnipeg.
Okay.
He picked up the flute. He picked up the flute and started to play it. And a week later, he went to Chicago to record. He played the flute solo in Undone on the first take. So he was like a magical musician where he could pick something up and just figure out the notes and play it. And that's the flute solo he played on Undone. It was a magical song because when it came out at the time, there was nothing else like it on the radio. I remember the first time I heard Girl From Ipanema. Everything was rocking and rolling and country music and everything on the radio. And suddenly out comes Girl From Ipanema and you go, wow, that sounds incredible. Her Esther Gilberto's voice, Stan Getz's sax, the acoustic guitar. There was nothing like it on the radio. And when Undone came out, everybody said the same thing. Amidst all the pop music of the 60s, out came this beautiful, smooth jazz song, and Burton's vocal in that is amazing. I mean, he's one of the world's greatest singers. He was 18 or 19 when he sang These Eyes and Undone. He was like a young kid. And it's just a magical song. You hear it on the radio to this day. You listen to These Eyes and try to sing to it. You can't sing to it. It's like four octaves in there, like Pavarotti or Elton John or Roy Orbison. You start to sing the song when it's low. And when it gets to the end and he's gone up four octaves, very few people can sing that.
And then you add his vibrato in there. He's got an insane vibrato, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, you were talking about violin. I once heard that you sometimes take a violin approach to your guitar playing. Do you ever actually pick up a physical violin and a bow from time to time for old time's sakes, even now and then?
Well, I decided I'm never going to play it again. And when you're five, you get a half-size violin. It's a little tiny one, like a toy.
Yeah.
And then you get bigger, and I got bigger and bigger and bigger. You get to be 6'2". You can't hold this thing. So what I have now is a viola, which is about 1/4 bigger than a violin. I put violin strings on it, and I forgot how to play. You've got to slide around and learn your positions. And then I saw Los Lobos playing at the Commodore in Vancouver many years ago, and David Hidalgo brought out a violin with frets on it, very Mexican. I went to him after the show and said, wow, you solved my problem. Instead of sounding like a kitten being tortured, because on a violin, you're sliding around trying to find the notes. It's like a little kitten being tortured. You're meow, meow, you're sliding around. To actually have frets and play real notes. I said, where did you get that done? He said, send it to Cabela Music in L.A. So I sent my viola there. They put 8 frets on it. So now I can play it and hit the notes exactly. And on the new album that's coming out, I played it with... I played it for fun, and Tal plays a 6-string banjo, and we got a fiddle in one song just for fun. But it's a rock and roll song. It's more like when you hear Bob O'Reilly by The Who, and that fiddle comes in on the ending.
Yeah,
it's not really a classic. It's like a violin playing a rock and solo, and so it's a lot of fun to get out. And you put a pickup on it, and it sounds really great.
Oh, man, I can't wait to hear this album that you and Tal are working on right now. Once again, speaking with the legendary Canadian rocker and icon, Randy Bachman, coming to the River Cree October 14th. Thanks for taking the time to chat today, Randy, and thanks for so many years and decades of the tunes that moved all of us.
Thank you, and I'll be back soon in the Edmonton.